listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Oh, I met this lady, what was it, last year maybe, when I was last in Tauranga? Tracy Coxhead, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Rodney. How are you?
Oh, all the better for talking to you.
Thank you.
You're quite the live one. I was so impressed meeting you. And you're a counsellor for Western Bays. And I thought, gosh, we need more people like you entering local government because, I don't know, I have a sense you might be shaking it up a bit.
Oh, look, I'm having a wonderful time, to be honest. I'm thoroughly enjoying my time in council, and it's really thanks to being encouraged by another councillor to come in to council, or at least run. And you don't know if you're going to get in or not, but it was, you know, okay, it was an experience. I thought, oh, we'll see what it's like campaigning, and that had its moments. And so then...
How did you campaign?
Well, lots of meetings, really. I wasn't really strong on the social media. I did the billboards and had a little bit of help from a friend with the 150 words and a decent photo. And really, it was more the meetings, I think. I don't know. You don't know why you get in, really. You don't know why people
And was that friend that encouraged you, our Margaret?
It was, yes. It was indeed.
Margaret Murray Benge, is that what
correct? Yes, correct.
The reason I had to hesitate was I always know her as Margaret Murray, but it's Margaret Murray. She is, I've had her on the show. She is one of the most wonderfully dynamic, go-getting women you could ever hope to meet.
Oh, she's amazing. And I mean, her passion for doing or standing up for what she believes is right, standing up for her country and standing up for ratepayers. She's outstanding. She's such a good mentor. I'm very grateful to Margaret. I mean, I wouldn't have thought in a million years of running for council otherwise. And she can be very, very, persuasive. Yes. And told me it was part-time and that it was probably 20 hours a week, and all of that's completely untrue, but it's fine. Like I said, I'm learning a lot, and it's learning about the structure of government or local government, but it's just been an amazing experience, and I'm truly humbled by some of our community, people that do so much for nothing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been wonderful for me.
Yes, it's embarrassing, actually.
It actually is. It makes you realise how little you've done yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are people that make society run and they receive no money, no thanks, no awards, but they make things happen. And they're everywhere, and men and women, and it is truly, truly humbling. And they do hours and hours and hours of voluntary work. I'm always amazed by it. It's a wonderful thing.
Yes, it absolutely is. And like you say, it's really humbling, and they ask for nothing. They don't get any recognition, no income from it, and they ask for nothing. So, as I say, there's a whole world out there I didn't know about, really.
Margaret Murray Benge, I remember her as the mayor of Waimari Borough Council in Christchurch in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
At that stage, women and local government weren't a thing.
Yes, she's a groundbreaker.
And she had those men whipped into line. Right? She was so elegant, as you say, so persuasive, so commanding, and always very beautifully and elegantly dressed.
And still is.
She was, and that is 40 years ago.
Mm. Yeah, she's incredible.
Else. Now, what's it like being a counsellor? What do you do?
You do an awful lot of reading. You
so
spend
these are
time,
reports?
Yes, the reports, yeah. And there's an awful lot of, meeting with people in the community who may have issues, concerns. So there's a lot of that goes on. And, meetings, of course. We've got, I don't know how many a month. Let's say probably 8 a month would be around about right. So these are workshops and meetings.
And this is Western Bays, which is all around Tauranga, but not Tauranga,
correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big area.
It is, yes. Yeah.
And do you have a particular ward in that area?
Yeah, I'm in the Kaimai ward, so same one as Margaret, actually. So there's four Kaimai ward councillors. So it is geographically a large area. A little challenging for that reason alone. But by the numbers, we've got the same numbers pretty much as, you know, Te Puke, Makatu ward. So, yeah, it's a great experience.
Mm. So you're pleased you did it?
Yeah,
I want to encourage people to do it, right? Because it's just a matter of putting your name in the hat, really. I had a friend who used to put his name down on everything, and he said if they have to go over your name four or five times when it comes to voting, like he'd stand for the local hospital board, he'd stand for this, that, and the other thing. And he said, oh, this guy's still going, oh, I'll give him a tick for something.
Yeah, I'm sure that's about all the science that's involved in it, Rodney.
And do you get along at council, or does it get a bit tense?
See, that's the really interesting thing. I would call us quite collegial.
Yes.
But we don't all agree, and we'll have some quite heated meetings. And it's never personal. The minute you walk out of there, it's done and dusted. It's never personal. There's no repercussions. It's actually quite liberating to be elected, because it's not that you go in there and just say any old thing, but you go in there with the knowledge that if you're talking on behalf of ratepayers and you're passionate about what you're doing, then it has a forum and you are listened to. Mm. So that's quite empowering. It's a very new experience, having worked all my life in corporates, and having to tow a company line. That's a very different way of approaching things.
Mm, good for you. Well, I'm very proud of you. Now, are you going to stand again?
Oh, we'll have to see what happens. It's still a long way off, really. I mean, we've got, well, it's probably not when you think about it. It'll be October next year. We'll see what happens.
Hope you do.
Thank you.
No, I want people like you. Now, the reason for getting you on is we have this thing called the digital, I can't even say it right, I've got to read it.
I know, it's quite a long handle.
The Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Act 2023. Now, just listeners, just let that sink into your mind. In 2023, last year, there was legislation passed into law called the Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Act 2023. I have no idea what that possibly could be. But there's a petition in the name of Tracy Coxhead, yours truly, to repeal it. Now, I've got to make a little admission here. I've signed this petition. And I signed this petition because Tracy asked me to. And I thought, if she's against it, I'm against it, right? But the Digital Identity Service Trust Framework Act, what a word salad mouthful is. What the hell is this thing?
It's an enabling act. It's to bring in digital identity in a nutshell. So let's go back. So its first reading was in October 2021. And there were 6 weeks for submissions. I vaguely recall making one. They got 4,500 submissions, largely against digital identity. And 4,049 of those submissions came within the last 2 days of the 6 weeks. I think there was something like another 400 or something in the last 2 hours of this. And largely that was put down to a disinformation being provided, like, you know, throughout the network, I guess, because it actually, the submissions close at the same time as the COVID-19 framework for the, what was it called? The traffic light system came in. That as soon as that closed, this is when the traffic light system came in.
Yeah.
So you can imagine where people were at the time as well. So, and not without due cause, in my view. So basically what the digital ID bill, we'll just call it that, it makes it easier, doesn't it, but rather than that word salad. Basically what it is setting up a framework where the government is providing a, I guess what you'd call it, like a digital wallet, where you can safely store your identity information. And so they're going to have trusted partners who can also go in front of a panel and be included in this framework. So let's melt it down. What's it going to actually achieve? So if you, for example, you hand over your identity, your digital identity information to the government, and so that would mean presumably, see, there's very little detail about this, presumably it's biometric, so you would be probably doing it through the Realme logon. And at the, I don't know if you've been on that for getting a passport.
I have.
Yes. So you might recall having your photo taken by.
Yes.
I imagine, and as I say, I'm only speculating here because there's not a lot of detail around the process, but I would imagine it's the same process. So what they're saying is it's to, because of people who may not have access to identity or identification methods. So, for example, they don't have a passport, they don't have a driver's license. I would say there's very few people in New Zealand who don't have one or the other, but there will be some, perhaps the elderly, where during the lockdowns and not being able to travel, many passports would have lapsed. So there is that possibility. But the reality is, I mean, why do we need the government controlling this? So in my view, this is where we start to look overseas. So what I've done is had a look at, well, what's happening overseas? So India has been a very large adopter of this. And so pretty much people there think it's compulsory. It's not. It's still voluntary. But your life is very hard to manage without being part of it. And so what I mean by that is it's going to, over there, for example, if you want access to healthcare, you need your digital identity. Opening bank accounts, access to things like power services, internet services, phone services, travel, even getting into social media, government benefits, voting. All these things are now being wrapped into that digital identity framework. So it's a bit like when the banks took away checks. So your ability to write out a check was taken away, really pushing people down the digital path. So as you can see, whilst it's going to be voluntary in New Zealand, you can see how it would eventually become difficult to manage without this. Does that all make sense?
Yes, I hate it.
You do already?
Look, it's chilling, even hearing you describe it, because, to be fair, 4 years ago, this would have passed me by, oh, well, digital ID, what's the big deal, right? Because 4 years ago, I was young and silly.
Yeah, we all were.
And I trusted officials. And I trusted my politicians, literally, and I trusted the government. And I thought, look, overall, the system adds up to looking after us as Kiwis, right?
Mm.
I no longer believe that for a second. So everything like this makes me suspicious, because I watched that horrible parliament, and it wasn't just Jacinda, it was every one of them, use every device they could to make our life hell. So if they had this digital ID business going, they've got an easy way to deal to us.
Yeah, and look, it's largely gone unchecked because since that the submission period closed 2nd of December 2021, there's been no more talk of it. There's no conversation around it. It's actually passed right through without any opposition from any party. And it's basically gained royal assent just before the new government was formed, was elected. So it's gone unchecked. And I started to think, well, excuse me, what brought it back to my attention was, I think it might have been a petition in Australia where they got 65,000 signatures. And it was very rushed. It was just pre the digital identity coming into Australia, which came in about 2 months ago. And it was rushed through. And I thought, oh, where's ours got to? That's a really good point. It's gone quiet. So anyway, started to have a look and had a look around and obviously found out actually it's already gained royal assent. It's about to come into force on the 1st of July today. Happy birthday. And so basically I'm like, well, nobody's making any noise about this. It's really not being talked about. Actually, they are when you start looking, but you had to really look to find what people were saying about this and where was there any opposition to it in the public. So there are people who have opposed it or spoken out about it. For example, Jodie Browning, she's done a few podcasts, a couple for your channel as well. And she's done a really good podcast with Leighton Smith as well. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, like yeah. Leighton. She did an excellent interview with him, and that was all about the digital identity and also the CBDCs, so central bank digital currency. Do you? Okay. So,
well, I understand that a little bit more than this, which isn't saying much.
Yeah, no, that's right. And look, I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert. I've done an awful lot of research on this. But at the end of the locked around globally and what's happening overseas, but there's not actually a huge amount of publicly available information. I mean, I've got probably a good 600 or 700 pages worth of information for research, but it's hard to boil this down into bite-sized pieces because people will think, hang on a minute, I've already got digital money. I've got the bank who provides me with digital money with my EFTPOS card or whatever. So what's the difference? The difference is that this digital identity is held within the government framework. So how much, like you just said, how much oversight do you want the government to have of your affairs?
Yeah.
And how much do you want your services through government departments to be contingent on you having this?
And what is the problem in my life right now that this is designed to fix?
Well, you're right. Most people don't have a problem. I think it was Jodie Browning. She did an OIA on how much fraud is committed in New Zealand with passport fraud and driver's licenses. And it's very, very low. So you're dead right. If you're going to promote something, it has to be solving a problem. And this is coming in for a problem I personally don't perceive that we have.
But there's something chilling about the government having a number and all your information on it, and then that being having to be used increasingly. And you can imagine that becoming a thing. Like, I'm a total conspiracy theorist now, right? So I just take a thing like this and say, what's the worst they could do with it? And then I'm still fall short in my experience now. But they'd have this ID. You can imagine having to flash it when you go to the supermarket to go in.
Yeah.
And then you flash that and they say, oh, hang on, beep, that guy's not vaccinated.
I think so. Actually, on there, and two things you just said. One is you're a conspiracy theorist. Well, this is not a conspiracy. This is actually what's happening, and we are left with very little information about what its intent is, and as you said, what is the benefit to us? What problem is this solving? So the other thing that you just mentioned about the passport, the vaccine passport, if you like. So there was something similar with IATA, which is the International Travel Organization, Association. And to solve the global travel issues that we had during the COVID period, they did actually have a travel pass, which had information about your vaccination status. So, yes, this is potentially going to be for one of those. It's going to be used for something like this as well. Potentially.
Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they?
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? Why else would else would they want it, perhaps? I don't know.
And on that ID, it could be recorded that, oh, this person's been known to use hate speech.
Potentially. So there are people, and I've read an awful lot of more information today, and there are, and I mean, it seems obvious to me, and it'll seem obvious to you, but there are natural links. So let's talk about how this goes into the CBDCs. Yeah. So you're going to need a digital framework or a digital ID framework to be able to progress with the central bank digital currency. Now, that's currently at a stage where they're asking for submissions. There's a questionnaire on the Reserve Bank website. Now, it's 13 questions, and it's all kind of like a questionnaire that assumes you think it's a great idea. So it's one of those. So you can actually write your own submission, which I would probably encourage people to do, because you want to be able to say exactly what you're thinking and see how this has worked elsewhere. So basically that's going to be, you know, this is going to need, CBDCs are going to need digital ID. And then the problem with the CBDCs, again, what problem are we trying to solve?
Yeah.
So we already have access to digital money in New Zealand through the banks. And the questions for me are, so if you've got the Reserve Bank and there's no line between the Reserve Bank and the public, not like with the bank, we've got the bank, the Reserve Bank, and then the public, there's nothing between us, right?
No.
And so that money is presumably, it's a storage of wealth. So let's say, I think the estimate was, and I think it's conservative, 10% of the deposit monies in the country are held within the CBDC at the Reserve Bank, and that, let's call it that ledger. So that takes 10% of the deposit money out of the system. So how does that impact New Zealand banks? Now, New Zealand banks are all party to this digital ID. They're all lobbying sponsors of it. So what does that do to their business? And I'm a banker, I'm a financier. So my thoughts are, well, so deposits also are what banks use to lend money, right? And then you deposit your $10 with the Reserve Bank, and then you can borrow $100 and so on and so forth. That's how it works. So how does that impact people being able to borrow? And I haven't heard anyone else talking about this. This is just the questions I have. I'm not saying this is going to be an issue or whatever, but it seems to me that there are a lot of questions that need to be answered on this as well. And then to your point, taking the CBD to the next stage, it's programmable. So what is programmable cash? What does that mean? So it means it's, you can program it. So it can be, let's say, it could be spatially programmed. So you could only use it in a certain area, for example. Yeah. It could be commodity specific. So certain items you can't buy, certain items you can, which leads to what you just said about social credit scoring. And how does that then come into play? Doesn't it all start to fall into place, Rodney?
It's terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying. And what makes it doubly terrifying is all the political parties joined hands and said, let's just pass this all together. We'll all agree, no debate, no dissent. We'll just talk about it in Parliament so no one gets to know of it. And my experience is when Parliament sort of gets together and agrees on something, there's three possibilities. One is it's the MPs looking after themselves. They're voting on their superannuation. Two, they're doing something that's so wonderful for the country, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
And they all say, this is so obvious, let's all vote for it. Or C, this is something good for government, bad for us.
Mm.
And I reckon this is a definite C.
You have to ask, though, why, as a politician, this affects you, your family, your friends, your wider circle, and the whole country. Why would you want something that wasn't the best thing for the greater population? That's a question I have to ask always.
Yes, but you see, it's very easy to convince a politician of something. So an official can sit down, oh, I'll send my officials over. And they'll say, you know, here's all the good reasons for this.
Mm.
And it's like a salesman selling you a car. It's just the best thing in the world.
Mm.
And everyone's voting for it. Do you want to be the one that looks silly and voting against this? This is the way of the future. I suspect, and it sounds amazing, and there's no awareness of where this leads.
Mm. I don't, well, that's right. And I think what we forget sometimes too, Rodney, is that politicians are probably working, I don't know, often 12-hour days. They probably read an awful lot of information and some things just get overlooked. This, exactly what you said, this sounds quite oblique. What does it actually mean?
The Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Act 2023, I fall asleep saying the title.
Exactly. So it's not inspiring, is it?
No, no one's going to read this. And that's, again, when you see a bland thing like this, oh, we don't want it. I read the overview. I read the trust framework now while you were talking. I've got it here on my little phone. Lots and lots of clauses, lots of sections, I should say.
Mm.
There is 106 sections.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a board. Oh, it's an offence to knowingly or recklessly misrepresent a provider to be TF provider or service to be credit service. We don't need this.
So the providers are people who will, so they're the trusted framework providers, and that's the panel you're talking about, I think. So they'll be the people who will want to sign up where they are also able to use a digital identity service. So it'll be your internet providers. It'll be, like I said, your banks. Your banks will be into this. And obviously government departments. Now, I have read that there's, you know, this is kept securely and it's a framework that protects all of your information. However, in India, going back to the Indian example, the system was hacked. And 850 million Indian citizens, their information was hacked. So that's a huge number, even for India. So that says to me, you know, cyber attacks and all the rest of it, nothing's immune to cyber attacks.
Nothing.
So how is this going to be safer for us than, for example, the bank holding our ID? And yes, you know, for the bank to hold our ID, we do have to present our passport, our driver's license, or whatever other identification they require. But so instead of just this biometric method, but how is the government going to provide any further, you know, greater safety than you're already getting with your bank?
They're going to have a next step where there'll be a chip in your bum.
Gosh.
And they'll scan you. You must meet MPs locally in your job as a councillor. Have you asked them about this?
To be honest, my not local MPs, I haven't. Our local MPs are both national MPs, and not for a minute casting any aspersions, but I'm not sure it's something they would want to get their teeth into. So I have actually had a couple of people contact me who work in Parliament, not necessarily MPs, because of I think they're getting a little bit of noise around what does this mean, what's this all about, we don't want it. I don't think it's got anything to do with my petition. I think this might have been happening for a little while. But I also think it's probably raised a few eyebrows, like what is this all about? Mm. So don't worry. I mean, I will be making as much noise as I possibly can. Where I think it might actually land on perhaps more common ground.
Mm-hmm. And what was the process for deciding and making a submission?
Or setting up the petition?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I actually had to really think about that, because you've got to put your name to it. I decided Well, first of all, you've got to find out which platform you're actually going to use in terms of the petition. So having looked at change.org is probably one of the most commonly used ones, but that's a Microsoft solution. And I think a lot of people probably don't really want to use a Microsoft solution. You could probably get some flack over that, given it's Gates-owned, well, you know, initiated yep. stuff. And they ask for donations through change.org. So it's not donations that would come to me, but they would go to change.org. So I wasn't keen on that. I didn't think that was a good look. So I thought, well, what's the most – really your only other option is the parliamentary petition. There are others, but this is – I thought, well, you're just going to have to do it this way, Tracy. You know, you've just got to do it through a more respectable
yeah.
platform, dare I say that. And so – and you've got to put your name to it. So it took me, you know, a little while to get my head around all that and then do all the research because, you know, if you do something like this, you want to be the expert, but you're never 100% the expert, right? And sooner or later, sometimes you've just got to make a decision and run with it. And if something's bothering me, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do nothing about it. There was no one else doing anything. There was no other noise around. I thought, no, I've just got to do it. Go for it. Just do it. So typed it up, got a few people to have a look, some wordsmith it a little bit. And but reality is you get very little space on writing the petition about what you're actually petitioning about. So that's where your blurb comes in. And, yeah, I've just gone with it. I've just had to run with it.
And you
because
send it
I am hugely concerned about this.
And you send it off to Parliament?
Yep.
And did they have to reword it or was it okay?
So they slightly amended one word. I can't even remember what it was. It was okay. Nothing. It was negligible.
So it goes up on their webpage, and that's where you find it under petitions.
Yes,
Parliament.
Yes.
We'll put it in the show notes on RCR.
Thank you. I'd love that.
I want to read the notes. That the petition request that the House of Representatives repeal the Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Act 2023. And then you say the reason. This bill passed its first reading on the 19th of the 10th, 21, without opposition from any party. Public submissions were open for 6 weeks, and by closing date, 2nd of the 12th, 2021, over 4,500 submissions were received, 4,049 in the last 2 days. Since then, I've not been aware of any public awareness campaign advising the public of the intent and purpose of the framework. I believe there's been a lack of transparency and the benefit of the framework has not been illustrated. Sounds perfect.
Thank you. Yeah, look, and that's, look, maybe there is a place for this, but tell us about it. What is the benefit?
So how do we go about getting petitions? I suppose you talk to RCR, you put it up on social media and hope people spread it around a little bit.
Well, and as I said, my social media is not very active. I'm not very active on social media, so I've had some people pick up my petition and support me.
Mm-hmm.
And people who have a very good reach. So Kirsten Murfitt, I've had NZDSOS have supported it.
Right.
Who else? Holy Heka Tui Teka, I don't know if you know who he is on
Twitter.
Yes,
I do. X. I follow him or her on X. They're a delight. They're very funny.
Yes.
Do you know who it is?
Great.
You don't have to say.
No. Plenty of followers. Resistance P was another one. So people that, had a good reach, and then since then, thankfully, that's grown arms and legs. So I just checked before I came on this call. So it's nearly 9,000 signatures.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, which is would never have happened if those people hadn't been able to help me with this.
9,000's a lot.
Yeah, we're nearly there. It's 8,830. So
okay, everyone. So how do people just Google it or do they find it on Parliament? How do they have
some we'll petitions put a link, at Parliament? But yeah. I'm also on Twitter. So Tracy Cox said on Twitter.
Okay. I'll have to follow you.
Yeah. So look, this is just, like I said, I'm not really all over the social media stuff. So I've only just set up this page. So I've got very few followers. So I'd be grateful. I've got other information as well. I've got other information about digital ID and CBDCs on there as well.
Right.
So, yeah, I'd be very grateful if people followed me.
There you go. Tracy Coxhead, councillor, Livewire, doing something about that word salad. the digital services. I can't say it without reading it. I honestly, my phone's gone blank and I can't say it. The Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Act 2023.
Yep.
You don't have to read to know you don't like it. And if you want to have a digital ID, if you want to be commoditized and pasteurized and homogenized, because this is what your government wants in 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time, this is the start of it. And we've got a perfectly good passport system. We've got a perfectly good driver's license system. You go into the hospital, they've got a number for you. That's enough. Yeah. We don't need this ID system. No good will come of this, Tracy.
Oh, look, and I just want to point out, people will say, I mean, I was at a meeting the other day and people were saying, well, you know, what happens if we don't join up? Everybody else in the world has. Well, 37 countries, to my knowledge, have gone down this path. So there's a lot. And all of the Five Eyes, bar USA, are looking at digital ID. Not quite sure. Maybe it's to do with the election in the States. I'm not sure why. But Denmark, Norway have rejected it. They don't believe there's enough information or as you say, enough of a benefit being demonstrated by this. So we do have an opportunity to push back on this and stop it. We do not have to do this.
Right. There you go. Sign the petition, Tracy Coxhead, repeal the Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Act 2023. Force them to come to us and explain to us why we need this digital ID. I think they have a tough time. You're a delight, Tracy. You're on Rally Check Radio. If you got insight or comments, send us a text at 2057. Email me at inbox@rallycheck.radio.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.